listening to everyone.
I feel like, welcome back to the Angry Young Men podcast, I guess. It's, if it can even be considered welcome back, because, damn, it feels like we started and then we stopped and then we
it's
started.
It's been like a year.
I feel like, just the events of the past weekend, like, yeah, it's been quite a lot that I feel like we should discuss, especially with what's going on in Gaza and, you know, obviously, we're discussing British politics, well, politics worldwide and stuff like that, but obviously we are based in Britain and there's been a lot that's been going on here in terms of like the debate around what the fuck the government's doing, what the people are, their views as well. So I feel like it's really important to stress that, especially considering that we went to the march. There's also been a lot of discussion surrounding that and a lot of things
self-report.
That
I
feel like we should sort of dive into, but just for those who have sort of been living under a rock and don't know what's going on in Gaza and the West Bank, what the Zionist state is doing, would you like to give us a brief overview, I suppose, Liam?
Yeah, okay. All right, so first of all, I mean, like, you've got basically an open-air prison. You've got occupied land, obviously, in the West Bank, and an open-air prison in Gaza after, I think it was 2005, Israel pulled out, and their settlers pulled out as well, because they just realized, like, it's fucked here. We're not going to get anything done. And yeah, basically they just pulled out
and making
decided we'll just imprison them instead.
Yep.
So basically I've got some numbers here from the World Health Organization from the 10th. They said 11,000 people have been killed, 70% women and children. Okay. Obviously yeah. The women and children thing is a bit loaded, but you know.
Yeah. Gendered language, but at the same time, I feel like it's still like just something important to realize, because I think another thing that a lot of people don't realize about like what's going on in Gaza is that a lot of these people, regardless of that sort of term, women and children, like they are dependents. You have like lots of people who are extremely young, lots of people who are elderly as well, who have nothing to do with supposed like the purported violence and stuff like that, that are still like becoming victims of it, of the Zionist state, of the, you know, occupation forces. What they're trying to push upon that land, that territory.
Yeah, for sure.
You can continue with that.
Cheers. So it says on average, a child is killed every 10 minutes. So, I mean, you can just picture how many children are being killed. It's like totally insane.
Mm.
You've got 1.5 million people who've been forced out of their home and told to go to the south of Gaza Strip. And then on the way, which was being bombed.
Mm. It was like that incident where the checkpoint was being bombed as well. Like, as in, they said, like, they gave them like 15 minutes or a really absurdly short amount of time to be like, okay, we're going to literally flatten your homes. Because Hamas is supposedly residing within these places. And then they ended up bombing the checkpoint as well. That they guaranteed to be clear. It's just messed up.
Yeah, definitely. You've got 27,000 people who are wounded. So obviously they need a hospital. But also since the 7th of October, you've had 250 attacks on hospitals in Gaza and the West Bank River. So you're creating a humanitarian crisis, basically on purpose. And then one day last week, we had 5 attacks on 5 different hospitals in one day. Which is insane.
You can see, like, also the stuff that they've been putting out about, like, that one hospital. I think there's the propaganda of that lady, like, who's saying, oh, yeah, Hamas are here, Hamas are here. And, like, it was really obviously just straight up fabricated propaganda with the accent and sort of, like, the state, the,
yeah,
the background.
Yeah, it was funny.
Like, even the stethoscope
speaking
was fake.
English half the time as well.
Yeah. And it's like, she was saying that, oh, yeah, Hamas has taken all our medication and all our was it, the fuel, when it's like been known for like a few days now that when they've run out, they've literally had to resort to vinegar to sterilize their equipment, let alone like have like proper medication or equipment. And it just goes to show how like just absurd this Zionist sort of propaganda machine is and how out of touch they are. Like, it's just, I mean, no other way to describe it other than like just comically just ridiculous claims that they're making, and stuff that they expect us to believe. But yeah,
exactly. And then 100 UN workers who normally you can't get away with killing a UN worker. Like, it's the equivalent of, I mean, obviously UN itself is like, it's not the greatest organization in the world, but it's kind of recognized most places as like the arbiter of international disputes.
Yeah, sort of
if you
like
literally just
appellate.
Kill them, it's like, it's just fucked, basically.
I guess the Zionists can get away with that shit, though. It's, very interesting double standards that are imposed when it comes to international laws.
But... literally, okay, so I think I saw the other day, it took two UN resolutions, two UN decisions to invade Iraq, supposedly. That was the legal justification for it. Israel, so far, I think, has had 70 decisions.
There's not even been an invasion, that's just to help, I'm guessing that's just to help, like, Gazans and, you know, people who are facing literal genocide, because I think that's, I think that's what sort of distinguishes this from, like, you know, previous periods in history of, like, you know, this conflict. It's like, it's happening at an accelerated rate, unprecedented rates. There's a lot more that is visible, and, you know, because I think, you know, technology, social media, that kind of stuff has given a lot more exposure to it. That we're clearly seeing, and that, you know, whole bloodlines are being wiped out.
Yeah, areas literally being flattened, people and whose whole family of it, what, extended family, even into like hundreds of people just in the same day, just gone.
And I think that's what distinguishes like this year, from like past, I guess like past moments where we've seen stuff going on, that's really like, been resonating with the people and stuff. But obviously,
yeah, for sure.
That culminated in the marches that we've been seeing across loads and loads of different countries. I think it's, you know, really, it does, amidst all this, like, sort of what we're seeing in Gaza and stuff, and the sort of responses that we're seeing worldwide, has actually been quite hopeful, in my opinion, including this National March for Palestine in London that was here to discuss.
Well, I think it was like the American public, 70%, both parties, wanted a ceasefire. And in the Congress, I think it was 4% of congressional representatives wanted a ceasefire.
So, I mean, like, of course, I agree, it's kind of fucked when it comes to the governments. But, from the people's perspective, like, as in from the perspective of, like, the people and shit like that, like, as in what we've been literally seeing on the streets and the protests that we've been seeing, I think it's a... there's been lots of like engagement with this. I feel like, you know, it's been quite hopeful, and talking to especially some of the oldies in like the marches yesterday,
definitely.
On the 11th. Yeah. Like, a lot of them were saying the same thing.
When my coach went through Birmingham, we picked up two people, like an old married couple, and like the entire journey they were talking about it. And yeah, it was nice. So, I mean, sometimes it feels like it is kind of more youth based, the whole thing. Just because that's where the support is right now, but like it is definitely universal, but like you just have to extend it out.
I think I saw a tweet somewhere, some people were saying that like all these movements, like left-wing, like non-labor movements, are like either comprised of like proper oldies, like people back in the CND days, 70s, or just really young, like either not Zoomers, like us, a Corbynista.
We are Zoomers, people. Mate,
I don't know. I mean,
we're definitely not alpha.
I feel like 2000-2001, it's like a no man's land. We're not like Zoom. We're not fucking addicted to Fortnite.
No,
we
are Gen Z, basically.
And I wouldn't say like we're into Friends and stuff like that. Like, you know, the TV show and shit, like millennials and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's
like
millennials.
But anyway, that's not what we're here to discuss.
we got sidetracked.
Yeah, we're here to talk about like obviously what we saw at the National March for Palestine. because yeah, that there was a lot of reporting around it, and
yeah,
after it, flawed, well, that really doesn't reflect what we saw, at least.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I've always distrusted the media, but it kind of just put it into manifest how badly it was reported on versus the reality of actually what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just biased. Really, that's it.
Interesting framing as well. I think, like, just the way that sort of the far right, like, counter protests were equated to supposed Hamas sympathizers and, like, you know, violent, like, equating signs to literally metal barriers being thrown at people, as in signs that might, like, you know, trigger somebody or, like, make someone feel, like, uncomfortable, like, with regards to their complicity or, like, you know, them being, what do you call, just inactive or, like, you know, just ignoring what's going on in Gaza, as opposed to literally, you know, fucking metal batteries being thrown or, like, scuffles that were being instigated by these counter-protesters. I feel like that's just, it's really just a mask-off moment from the government, I can't lie. But
yeah, it's like, it's insane. But yeah, we'll get onto that. But yeah, I'll just finish this anyway. So out of the 10,000 trucks that they wanted to deliver to Gaza, this is the WHO, only 650 of them got through. So at the same time as you have bombing of hospitals, you have people being made into people who need to go to hospitals, you also have aid being denied.
Like, it's just, they're going, it's an all-encompassing, like, oppressive machine.
And then Israel turns around and says, UN and the WHO are members of Hamas, which is just, I mean, it's funny, really, just because of how, like, captured the UN and the WHO is by America.
If you're not laughing, you're crying. Like, it's just, it's just pitiful. It actually is just pitiful. It shows you what, like, our institutions are really just...
Israel's just really just doing their own thing and just getting away with it. Obviously, you, like, the propaganda machine as well has been working so fucking hard this whole time. So I think the first hospital they bombed, they said it was Hamas who bombed it from a rooftop, which was obviously untrue. Like, you had I think even the BBC and Channel 4 just, like, saying this, just calling them out on their bullshit, basically.
When you have, like, literal, you know, these institutions that are very much co-opted and, like, infiltrated by, like, government forces and stuff, like, calling it out, like, it'd be your own people because your lies are just that shoddy. It's just really poor, like, workmanship and shit like that. Like, obviously, it's completely detestable, but just that purely from a practical perspective, what the fuck are y'all doing? Like,
yeah, so the first stage is
they
denied it. Then they do the propaganda where they do, like, some Saddam Hussein type graphic of Hamas tunnels underneath a hospital.
Oh my god!
Like it's like, should a cartoon find a
history
character.
GCSE, like, textbook. Actually, not even a textbook. That's not your textbook tier.
And then you straight up just say this hospital is ran by Hamas, so anything is fair game, which is literally what happened.
Ridiculous! It's actually just. It's pitiful in both, like, the impact that it's having, but also just in, like, how stupid they take us for as the general populace, like, that is sort of having to read this shit or, like, you know,
well,
see this
it's
shit.
It's so geared towards people who speak English as well. Like, all of the threats from Israel to Hamas saying you need to move out of this hospital, they're all in English. Like, motherfucker, they don't speak English. Like, speak Arabic.
All the fucking Zionist state knows how to speak is fucking colonial languages, man.
Yeah, anyways. So now, recently, you've got, like, this new weapon, which is just, like, I mean, it's like a medieval type thing. So you have, I think it's the R9X. And it doesn't have, like, an explosive payload on it. It is basically, like, six blades attached to it. They're all, like, a meter long blade. Or, no, I think it was 1 meter long, it says. Anyway, when it explodes, it literally just, I mean, it just cuts you apart. Like, can you imagine a blade traveling at the speed of a missile, hitting something, and then just, like, I mean, there's pictures of kids with, like, their bones hanging out.
There is no, like, fucking need for that level of, like, ordnance other than to terrorize a population or, you know, an area and, like, force them to be you know, flee in a sense, you know. It's just, what the fuck is that needed for?
Okay, just... so I thought this was an interesting parallel by Sky. Okay, so they said the equivalent of, like, everyone in Gaza City moving to the south of Gaza is the equivalent of Birmingham. Everyone in Birmingham moving to Dudley.
It's actually mad if you deep it, though. Like,
yeah, it's insane. But, I mean, it's just funny. In,
like... And they know it's literally just a policy on all levels of like packing people in and just, you know, because they're all there, they're able to like mop them up easier in a sense, like literally just annihilate them. That, because that's what it is. Like, make no mistake.
So Gaza itself is 360 kilometers squared. Birmingham is 268 kilometers squared. And Dudley is 98 kilometers squared. So. Mm. I mean, it's hard.
Like, so it's literally Birmingham and Dudley is the whole space of Gaza. Like, if you deep in
which
that,
is...
you could probably like walk through all. Of, well, no, you can literally walk through all of that in a day.
I wouldn't probably want anyone to be trapped in Dudley. So, yeah,
put it in perspective, man.
Also, a lot of people are saying like the UK isn't even involved in this. Like, go protest Israel. Like, okay, so there is right now. There's a D notice out, so you can't report this in press. Mm-hmm. But there's a D notice around SAS involvement in the Gaza Strip, which means effectively...
Okay, I've heard of this to be fair, so you're going to have to elaborate.
Yeah, so a D notice basically is when the government's doing something and it doesn't want it reported, it will issue a D notice. And the D notice effectively means you can't talk about it in UK
mainstream
press.
Media, I'm guessing.
Yeah, you'll get charged.
Okay, well, good thing we're just a bunch of...
So, but you can... you can
on Spotify.
You can report on the, like, the existence of a D notice.
Okay.
So, apparently there's been loads of soldiers going to our bases in Cyprus.
Mm-hmm.
Which is... I mean, it's basically just like a land carrier in the middle of the Mediterranean that we have.
Mm-hmm. I mean, pretty much, yeah.
And, yeah, they're launching... operations into Gaza.
What do they have to be doing there? Like,
well, exactly.
They can't be up to no good. Is there any details of like what their involvement actually like encompasses? Whether it's like, I mean, are they even trying to hide like or make excuses like, oh, it's humanitarian aid or whatever, or like peacekeeping forces or whatever, or no. Military advisors, or whatever
SAS
the fuck they're gonna, or is it literally
not,
just nothing?
The SAS do not do humanitarian aid. SAS is purely...
They cannot be up to no good.
I mean, it's special forces, bro. They don't know. They don't know how to hand out aid. They're just there to shoot people, basically.
What, like, fucking high-level military operation does a bunch of, like, unimpoverished and displaced and, like, whatever. There's so much shit that you could say about, like, the Palestinian, like, populace at this moment, or, like, you know, whatever is on the Palestinian, like, territory. A threat is, like, a threat to British interests is, like, none of that. It's there's no reason for the British forces to be there. It's fucking that's the first I'm hearing.
Also,
of it,
at the same time, insane. You have America flying drones over Gaza, predominantly South Gaza, supposedly to find terrorists. So you do the math on that one.
Why the isn't South Gaza is that like the crossing like into Egypt?
Yes, South Gaza does have a crossing into Egypt, but like it's more underpopulated, I think, than the north of Gaza.
It's just fucking wafflemen. Why would they have to? Yeah, what would they have to be doing there? I mean, is that? I mean, I know that like the majority of Gaza is surrounded by like the Zionist states, like what they hold and shit. But like, what would surely they? If they were terrorist forces, they'd be on the front line, closer to the front lines, like, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually actively trying to combat. Like, why would they be at the humanitarian border crossing? Like, between that corridor, I guess. Any of that territory. It's,
and
they're not even trying to make their excuses good. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing has been like, it's been kind of a repudiation of how you manufacture consent, because no one is manufacturing consent, like, at all.
It's not any fucking, because we can like, see from like
they're the trying, but no one's buying it at all.
No one's buying it, but it's just like they almost can get away with it because there's no significant means of pressure. It's liberal democracy's a fucking joke at this point.
Yep.
And it's proving itself once again through these means, but
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, have you got some background on what actually happened? Like, what's the organization and that?
Well, yeah. I guess moving on, like, that being said about, you know, this whole shit about liberal democracy, it's not from a lack of people actively voicing their, you know, displeasure for what's been going on in our government's inaction and facilitation of this shit.
To be fair, they did want to stop the protest. There was so much pressure on the... I don't even know his name, to be fair. He hasn't got, like... Okay, so the last one had, like, a memorable name, at least. Cressida Dick. Or is this one... I mean, I don't know what he's called, but, like, there was so much pressure on him to just not even allow it to happen.
The Commissioner of the Met.
Yep.
And... his name is Mark Roush.
Rowley.
Isn't that dude from...
Diary of a Wimpy Kid. He touched the cheese.
Dear me. No. There was this, it's the lack of action from the, you know, a top-down perspective is not from a lack of, like, calls for the ceasefire, calls for, like, you know, support for Gaza and, you know, us being against the Zionist state. There was lots of people that came out for the National March for Palestine, which is what we're going to discuss. So this was officially organized by six organizations. This was Stop the War Coalition, Palestine Solidarity Campaign, Friends of Al-Aqsa, Muslim Association of Britain, Palestinian Forum in Britain, and the CND, Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. So obviously this took place on Remembrance Day's day. It was like a day ago.
Also, it's not like the technical, because you celebrate it on the Sunday, right? And that's when all the Cenotaph shit happens.
I thought they had to change it for this.
Maybe they do it both days. I don't know. No, they didn't change shit. But basically, I think there was loads of reports in the news. It was the, you saw loads of poppies in the march. Like, it was by no means like an anti-poppy thing, even though, it's a flawed symbol, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. It's, what it's come to represent now is a complete sort of bastardization of what it was originally meant to represent.
Even in, like, the BBC, there was, like, they talked to, I think it was, like, a couple of people, and they all said, like, oh, yeah, on the train here, on the way here, we did, like, a minute silence, everything like that.
I went on a coach, and they did that, too. Like,
really?
They made sure. Yeah, no, they had, like, a live stream of what was going on at the Cenotaph at the time, because none of the procedures were, like, it was before even the bulk of people arrived in London. It was not at all disrupted. There was, the organizers in their official correspondence to people who were interested in attending explicitly stated that they wanted to respect the commemorations, and there was no condoned presence anywhere near Whitehall, which was where the Cenotaph is, where it was illegal, sort of happened. And they made sure that the march didn't even start until 12:45. The assembly was supposed to be at noon, which is, like, you know, a significant amount of time after 11:11, and the march was, you know, that was in Hyde Park, or rather, it was around Hyde Park, essentially. People were supposed to congregate around there around noon, like near Bond Street.
It's like a fair distance away, isn't it?
Say that again, sorry?
I don't even know London, but it's like, it's fairly far away.
Yeah, you would not be able to get between those places in an hour. There was no, like, they literally organized it in a sense where it would not be able to disrupt any sort of memorial stuff. So for the government to be equating that, or, like, for fears to be stoked up around that by fucking Suella, like, no, it's clearly not. If you actually, like, give a shit about what people are saying, it's
funny. You know. So, like, meanwhile at the Cenotaph, you had I think it was 10 minutes before the remembrance sort of service was meant to start.
11:11, yeah.
You had, like, hooligans basically taking over the Cenotaph. But yeah, we'll get onto that anyway. Sorry, carry on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's. That's one of our main points that we want to talk about. But yeah, to again underline, if you look at official correspondence, there was no intention to be disruptive at all. It was merely to protest and call for a ceasefire, you know, and put pressure on the government and stuff like that. So the route was through Grosvenor Street, past Victoria Station, across Waxwood Ridge, and towards the US Embassy, finishing at a stage in Nine Elms Lane with speakers such as Corbyn. I think Corbyn was out there and a few others. There was a clear emphasis on discipline and just, like, you know, orderliness. So, like, everyone was to, you know, they were strongly advising to stay to this route and, like, you know, sure they could go down like some side streets, but like, you know, they were no sort of direction towards like Whitehall. There was, you know, requests for no fireworks, no nothing like that, you know, I mean, like anything that could cause a problem or cause it to become a non-violent thing.
Even flares as well, like, yeah, they told people not to bring flares.
It was very explicit, because like and the majority of this was like families, right? It wasn't people who were like,
yeah, the amount of times we had to move out of the way for a pushchair was, I mean, it was insane.
Exactly. And there were people, I think I saw like a few amputees or disabled people as well, people who had physical like mobility issues and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it was
old
not,
people as well.
This is not a sort of crowd or march that is here to incite violence or stir up things. It was merely a show of presence to show like solidarity with the Palestinian people and, you know, sort of pressure for a ceasefire. Make calls for it, make demands for it in a sense, and make that visibly and audibly loud. Yeah, but that was sort of the overview. This was from 12:45, the march, and it officially ended at like 4:30, I think, and there was like a dispersal notice, yeah, and stuff like that. Wasn't enforced, people were still like around, but like there was no sort of like,
you can't enforce that when there's literally like thousands of people there.
Yeah,
it's impossible.
I think the official number was like 300,000. I think that's like, I mean, there's estimates as high as 800,000, but I don't think it got to that. Some people said 500,000, 500,000, which is like, maybe. I would say a good sort of estimate is between 300,000 and 500,000. Somewhere within that.
Definitely
that
the biggest march since 2003.
Yeah, no, I would say that's
like, true. Without a doubt. Anyway, let's just start chronologically, okay? So
yeah,
I'll give my sort of side before we started, okay? So you can give yours after. So I got the coach at 4:30. I didn't like no sleep, just like straight on that. Well, I had like an hour at home, but like it wasn't major. Got there, I think it was we got there quite early. It was 10:30, and meanwhile I'm waiting for you for like 3 hours.
Mate, it was a big fucking like turnout. Okay, like there were a lot of coaches. There was a lot of traffic. I understand.
Yeah, but it pissed me off so much. I was literally sat on a bench for like 2 hours trying to wait for you. I ate all of my pasta. I had a huge box of pasta. It was just like, I was too hungry by the end of it.
You were like a survival prepper, man. You were waiting for the apocalypse. To be fair, I thought it was going to be a lot more confrontational and there was going to be a lot, but like, I would say it went pretty like, okay.
You think? Yeah.
I think so. I mean, other than the stuff surrounding it, which obviously we'll get into, the EDL and also...
Yeah, so while I was waiting for you, so people were amassing the... I don't know London very well.
Yeah.
But basically, on one of the entrances to Hyde Park, there's like an island. And on the island, I don't know how to describe it. There's like an Australia monument or something. I think it's like a war
like thing. Anzac or something.
Something like that. Anyway, well, the march went past that earlier. That's where those barriers were that were blocking us in for ages.
As in, was it blocking it, like keeping you in or keeping you out from Hyde Park?
No, the ones that we were like, oh, should we jump over this? Like the ones on that island.
Do you remember?
The ones that, yeah, I mean, it's not important.
Oh, right, like the circular one. Oh, I thought you meant before the march. Okay, no, this was after. Yeah, this was around... the Wellington Arch, yeah, quite literally. Anyway, Hyde Park corner.
So that road there, I saw there was a couple of people with St. George's flags, and they tried to rush Palestinian protesters, basically.
What time was this?
This was before you came. I can't remember. Maybe probably like 12:30, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, they just got like immediately arrested, like on site. Like it was good. I've got my scarf.
Do you remember what we were last talking about?
This house is freezing.
I remember what we were last talking about.
No.
I think we mentioned the Wellington Arch.
I was talking about how the EDL just got completely battered.
By the police?
Well, no.
How many officers? What were the numbers there? Because I know there was like, it said in the news
it was
a bunch
fairly
of subgroups.
Fairly small group.
Okay.
But yeah, we'll get on to that. Police, yeah. I don't know. To be honest, I was in the actual park at the time and there were so many people, like, you literally couldn't see. But I just saw St. George's flags, a couple people, and then just getting arrested.
Unlucky.
Yeah, we they hate to see it.
How lucky. Imagine failing at hating. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, anyway, talk about how you got there.
I mean, yeah, so I was I got up through a free coach. There was like a bunch that were being organized by like groups that were affiliated with these six organizers, primarily centered around like, you know, like masjids, mosques, charitable organizations. Sometimes there were student group ones as well, just across the Midlands and stuff. I was at Nottingham at the time, and I ended up going with this group called the Deen International Organization. I think it's just a network of different Islamic sort of related institutions, like whether that's masjids and mosques. Gave me biryani for £3, pretty nice. But also
and flags as well.
Oh yeah, they gave us placards and stuff from Friends of Al-Aqsa. Also, yeah, the Palestinian flag, and there was like quite a few people on there that I met. Just there for various purposes. There was some people. There was a guy. The guy actually next to me. I sat down and. You know, I was just making small talk. It was Mohammed Sakhir, I believe his name is. He was the mayor of Nottingham in 2017, which is crazy. And also the sheriff of Nottingham in 2016.
As if they still have a sheriff. That's so funny.
Yeah, no. He was explaining. I was responding to that. I was like, yeah, that's kind of crazy. But the UK does this thing where like they keep the ceremonial roles. If it's like, it's basically for tourism and just like for a bit of fame, I don't know, just the novelty of it, I guess. But yeah, no, he showed up too, and he was telling me how he's like been part of Labour since like forever, basically, as long as he can remember. But he's sort of dropped out from since May because of, yeah, just the inaction and complete like dead horse it's become under Starmer.
Well,
and like,
yeah, go on.
He was saying like he's literally just waiting for a new party to pop up. Like, as in, he told me verbatim, if Corbyn goes, that's where I'm going to. He'll hand in his card, and he says, like, his membership card, and he says, like, even if it's, like, if it doesn't happen, like, I'll just leave next year anyway, because it's just, you know, it's completely, there's no sort of distinctive difference in terms of, like, you know, if it was to be an alternative government under Labour, I don't see what they would do differently to, because the Conservatives, it'll be the same trend of just austerity, not giving a shit about like what's going on in international, other than just following like orders from America or, you know, the trend of NATO and shit.
I agree.
And people are beginning to become cognizant of that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, people have been clocking on for ages. Labour's moved from like a mass member organization to basically just being kind of a diktat organization where if you happen to be a member and support them, then yeah, good for you. But like, why should the rest of us support you, basically?
It's just, there's nothing good that's going to come from the Labour Party. I'm fully convinced. But
anyway, no. Yeah, you were on this coach with this sheriff. What was your, when you got there, what were you thinking?
I mean, it was really just, I think it was quite inspiring to see like how many different groups there were there. Like, as in the amount of coaches, the amount of people who really just took an effort to make the time out of their day to attend this thing. You know, I always knew, I had the sense that it was going to be historic, but just to see the people there, what sort of people were there, you know, like families. It wasn't, you know, ruffians that the media were trying to make people out to be. It was literally, you know, families, people who, they weren't in like any friend, like they were always trying to say like Hamas sympathizers and shit like that. There was no sort of sense that it was anything out of the ordinary or any foul play that was going on. It was literally just people who have seen very clearly, because they're doing a shit job of covering it up, or, you know, even making excuses for it, what's been going on in Gaza and the West Bank, and aren't happy about it. You know,
so you had like, there were so many different types of groups there. So obviously you had a lot of Muslim people there. You had, I think it was Orthodox Jews. We were walking around with them for a bit. You had Celtic Club, like that was quite nice to see. With their flag. You had like obviously people like with signs like "Queers for Palestine." You had like queer people there.
And like it's the most terminally online shit when people are like, oh yeah, why are queer people there? Like, you'd be the first to go under like a Sharia law. It's some stupid shit like that, because they really don't understand like what is being protested, what's at stake here. It's not about, it's a humanitarian crisis. And like the sheriff himself,
but also
got in the sheriff. he was saying himself, like, it's not about, like, it doesn't matter, we're all humans at the end of the day, and like, we can see what's going on, and it's just not on. It's not, you know.
I mean, people think like gay people don't exist in Gaza. Like, you're literally killing, I mean, how many gay people have probably already been killed? What is it, like 1 in 4 people are gay? I mean, just 11,000.
The bombs, what, like, don't discriminate based off of sexuality.
Like 3,000 people just being killed.
Yeah, like, the bombs don't discriminate based off sexuality. They're not like, oh, shit, he's got a pipe, also, like, let's fuck
there's
off.
So many stories about gay people in Palestine. Like, there's, I don't know if you've ever seen that website where you can, like, comment. I mean, it's called Queering the Map. It's like...
Yeah.
I mean, some of the comments there are just, like, they're heartbreaking. It's like people saying they had their, like, where they had their first kiss, and then saying, oh, like, I'll miss you forever. Like, you're dead now, basically. Like, it's, you can't really condone it.
Yeah, people who've been sponsoring, or, you know, I was talking to a lady from the CND, and she was saying that, like, you know, with her income, she sponsors a family as well, and they've literally had nothing back. Like, they could very well just be accepting the fact that these people who they've been corresponding with for years, I think it was an orphan. Just, yeah. It's like, it's kind of just, it's, I mean, how do you even react to that? How do you even, there's no way to sort of describe, it's just, yeah. And I feel like just over the past weeks, that's what we've been seeing in the media. And I think everyone's sort of got this sense of this ain't right. And people are coming together, which is really nice. It's just putting pressure on the government, which is the main thing. But yeah, I guess we can follow on to, like, what was actually going on in the march then.
Yeah, so obviously, I mean, it took us, like, best part of, like, 40 minutes, an hour to actually meet each other, because you didn't have charging your phone. Yes. which was no data, no battery, no nothing. Because, like, the data didn't work, because there was so many people in, like, one square bit, and it was probably all going onto one cell tower, and, like, you just couldn't get signal at all.
Yeah. I think definitely if there was anything to be like this, like, people should look up, like, common procedure for, like, you know, protests and, like, preparation. There should have been a rendezvous point. There should have been this and that.
Yes.
The group that I did have, they had, like, a steward sort of figure, and that's what was recommended by the organizers. But obviously, we were trying to meet up, and we came by two different means with two different groups. I mean, you came from a coach. I came from a coach with an organization and shit like that. It was just, yeah.
Yeah, so we meet up, and then what was the first thing we did? We went to the workers' party tent just to see what the crack was there.
Yeah, and I think they were trying to do some sort of, they're preparing for some speakers and stuff. There was, like, a few pundits that I recognized. There was this one libertarian guy that workers had at a Noti NATO rally, and I was just like, okay, well, I mean,
all the good. Wait, what libertarian guy?
Yep, purely because he's anti-war.
Okay, interesting. I mean, the libertarian position would probably be, why can't anyone bomb anyone, right?
Like, I don't know. No, I think it's also, like, the whole angle about liberty and happiness, whatever the fuck. Like, as in, we have the right to be unoppressed and no government interference. So there's also that angle of it. I think they met him through just pro-Russia rallies and stuff like that, because he's also like, oh, why are the American tax dollars spending money on NATO and giving Ukraine stuff.
Imagine meeting your mate at a pro-Russia rally. That's so funny.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, there was that. Just a lot of these organizations didn't really seem to be... They just still want to peddle their messages and shit, like that. So, or brand of socialism. It's like...
Was it you that asked them? I think it was socialist workers. Someone asked them, like, where are your proceeds from your newspaper selling, or your merch selling? Where are they actually going?
Yeah.
Literally, they all said they're going to our party.
Which is ridiculous. So, like, the way that they are so able to say that openly, without shame as well, without any, like, it just goes to show, like
the guy just said it freely. He did not care.
It's a mask off moment once more. It reminds me of when the whole Black Lives Matter movement was happening in the wake of George Floyd's murder. I'm not going to name names, but there was a girl in our high school, a white girl at that, and she made an Etsy shop where with, like, basically making bead bracelets saying Black Lives Matter on them. And I asked her, are you going to, like, give that to any of the funds, like the bailout funds? Not the bailout funds, but as in, like, the bail funds and stuff like that, like, actually contribute that money. And she left me on red.
That's so funny.
Like, it's really disgusting how...
Wait, who was that? I'll blur it out. Oh, shit. That's so funny.
Yeah, like, one of the most story ones as well. But, like, quite literally...
She just saw the bag. Like, she chased it. I mean, it's kind of like the people who go to... they'll go to Trump rallies and they'll sell Trump t-shirts. And then they'll turn around and go to, like, a Biden rally and sell Biden t-shirts. Like, I see no difference between them and Socialist Workers Party. They're both, like, ultimately just profiting.
But the difference is opportunity. The difference between fucking what's going on in America there, that's like fucking you're debating between two parties, which are basically the same. And then here, we're actually talking about, hey, there's a genocide happening. We want to stop that. There's levels to it. Yeah, and I feel
you could argue it was even worse because of how similar the American parties are.
Yeah, literally. It's just, you know, it's almost, it's unsurprising that that shit would happen with the t-shirt vendors there. But like here, it's like, it's just have some fucking respect. Like, I feel like just all these alternative sort of fucking, not like the other girls fucking leftist groups here, just all like that. And it's just, I'm kind of disillusioned with partisan politics, like in terms of all these leftist squabbles and shit like that. It's can't be us because there are people dying. And I feel like, you know, what we saw, the good thing is this march was not like that. This march was families and people who are generally concerned, like common, you know, day-to-day citizens, people who...
I want to just say the vibes in Hyde Park before we started was so good. Like, so Hyde Park, there's like a couple of toilets, but you have to pay 20p on contactless to get in, which already is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we just hold open the barriers to each other. Like, people were just laughing and like joking around with each other. Like, there was no, I mean, I don't know. I've been to London a couple of times, but if you did that shit in London normally, like not even just the toilets, but just talk to people, people would look at you like you got two heads.
Yeah. Like, it's almost like you keep yourself to yourself in a sense. But here, everyone had... Yeah. Like, I didn't... There were no... You know, sometimes you see this, like, leftist infighting. But again, there was an emphasis on... They were just... You know, they were staying at the back of the line. They were just trying to peddle their newspapers and shit like that. That was not the bulk of the march. The bulk of the march were people who were generally, you know, concerned and, you know, coming together and also, you know, sort of standing in solidarity. There were chants, there were, you know, I don't know what the fuck could have been interpreted as an anti-Zionist chant, by the way, which is what, you know,
okay, there is a couple that like
anti-Semitic.
Yeah, so there is a couple that, like, I mean, I don't really know a lot about them, so I don't know whether I can really talk about them, but obviously the River to the Sea thing is a manufactured outrage, because I mean, Israel literally pulls the same shit. Like, they talk about the River to the Sea all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't by no means anti-Semitic to...
It's not a loaded...
It's
not a loaded sort of thing to say River to the Sea. That is literally quite literally a description.
It's in Israeli messaging that they want River to the Sea. Like, it's so obvious that that's just... Because it's an effective slogan, they want to stamp on it.
Mm.
And at the end of the day, the people that take offense to that, that is your problem, not mine.
I've not seen any, like,
actual... Okay, so today there's been so many opinion pieces of people being like, River to the Sea is really, really anti-Semitic. It's not. By your same logic, Israel doing it is Islamophobic.
Yeah, it's just
ridiculous. Well, which it actually is, but yeah.
it's not the term itself. Like, it's purely descriptive. It's demarcating this area in which these people live. It's not...
It, you know, does not imply the extermination of Jews. Literally no one there wanted that. Everyone wanted just one state. Well, not everyone wanted it. That's kind of a projection, but people wanted a place where Palestinians can just live and not be killed.
They wanted the ceasefire. The march was quite literally exactly for the ceasefire.
I mean, it wasn't even for like the giving back of like lands that Israel has took. It was literally just to stop the fighting.
Mm. To stop the fighting and also, you know, a celebration of the Palestinian people. The amount of times I heard "Anada mi Palestini," like the song being played on loudspeakers everywhere. It was really like the vibes were. I would say like just throughout the vibes were good. It wasn't even just, you know, there was no, even when people were coming up, like the Zionist, not the Zionist Jews, the Orthodox Jews came out and like against Zionism and stuff like that. Like, no, there was no confrontation. There was no sort of, you know, it was clearly people like trying
people
to get on.
People were just like expressing their gratitude.
A lot of people actually, like, it became a bit of a spectacle, like, as in people were taking pictures and stuff like that, which, you know, but I feel like...
Yeah, that felt a bit weird, actually, I won't lie.
It did, but the thing is, and this is what the organizers also, like, isn't those six organizers sort of underlined, is that they want people to be coming out and showing that, you know, being proud of, like, their identity, their section of society, and, like, showing that they stand with, like, you know, the Palestinian people. They stand against the genocide, against the oppression that the Zionist state is doing. There was an emphasis for trade unions to come out, like, in full regalia, not, you know, because that will put pressure on the unions, like, isn't the people who are at the head of the unions in terms of, you know, industrial action or anything that will, you know.
Didn't see a lot of the unions. I mean, I saw, like, a couple. There was, like, a Unison one.
Yeah, Unison was there.
I didn't see the rest of them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but, like, I feel like it was very important to show intersectionality, that, like, this wasn't just, you know, pretty much, like, as in one avenue that I can foresee this going down was, oh, it's just, like, you know, British Asian people, like, who are always, you know, they've always been, you know, pro-Palestine or whatever. And it's like, it wasn't just that, though. Like you said,
yeah, it was not.
So
anyway, we got kind of sidetracked there quite a bit. In terms of chronologically, so 11/11 comes around 10 minutes before 11/11 comes around. Obviously, you got, like, thugs just overrun the cenotaph. You had Tommy Robinson. He says that he's not far right anymore after being to prison, but there we go. You had, like, Turning Point UK, which, to be honest, is kind of a disgrace how that even exists, how we're literally too lazy to come up with our own thing. But there we go. And you have British Movement, which is literally neo-Nazis. Like, these people are, I mean, you saw that they had tattoos that were literally, like, swastikas. And then, you can't really ignore this. You had football, like, firms from Chelsea, from West Ham, and, like, other London clubs coming out. There was people, I think, in later photographs in Arsenal shirts, but I don't know whether that's, like, that was organized or what, but there we go.
It's crazy, like you say, it's crazy how these organizations can exist. They're supposedly supports Brexit, yet is banishing nationalist German symbols.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think we fought World War II for?
Like, yeah.
It was funny, because, like, the picture of the guy had a poppy on and a swastika tattooed on his chest. Like, he's playing both sides, so he always ends up on top.
But supposedly saying that people do not deserve to be bombed and, like, there should be a ceasefire, that's really what's disrespecting the troops or the people who gave their lives in World War II. Like, what?
So the police estimates there was 2,000 of these, like, far-right people there, basically. So 2,000 thugs. And then at the same time, you had investigations going on saying that, like, these far-right Telegram and WhatsApp group chats, they were some of them were organizing the buying of crossbows and projectiles to Palestinian protesters.
What are they trying to fucking hark back to the Crusades or something? Like, what?
Well, because Crusades feature quite a bit in sort of, like, the modern neo-Nazi kind of thing. Well, yeah, but also, I mean, obviously you've got the you've got Muslims on one side. Well, not all Muslims, obviously. And then you've got these people on the other, and they do kind of see themselves as, like, a crusade.
Two things on that. First of all, they very, very quickly forget that there are Orthodox Christian Palestinians out there that are also a victim of the Zionist state.
The flag of Palestine after, I think it was after Britain fucked off, it literally had a cross on it.
Yeah,
we saw it there. Right? Yeah, we saw it there.
You saw quite a range, really. Vexologist experts would be, like, fucking going crazy. But no, that's the first thing. And secondly, like, it's just not their fucking, like, it has nothing to do with what's, like, it's not going to impact them in the slightest. Like, this, they say, I think there were signs saying, like, oh, it's not pro-Palestinian, it's anti-British. How is it anti-British? Where in the messaging or the request for a ceasefire?
Is that not British values to, like, protest injustice? I would have thought.
British values is whatever the fucking
British
party
values
wants to make.
Don't exist as a whole. British values aren't different to any other values anywhere across the world. but
it's literally just a sense of like supremacy, or like, oh yeah, we want to be better. Britain is still exceptional, which we aren't. We're not any fucking different from another liberal democracy that kowtows to the American hegemon or imperialist like trends. For profit practices too.
So like, with these people, they were free to Nazi salute in Whitehall, next to the cenotaph. Just
next to like that. Veterans, people who fought in that war.
So the far right moves to Chinatown after, and then Tommy Robinson just gets in a taxi and fucks off. After he started it, he's like, yeah, I'm out. Which I kind of respect, to be fair.
He wanted to be the media darling and then lead the charge and then go back to fucking podcasts or talk shows or whatever the fuck that he's doing as well.
Yeah, so you had a lot of people not even being arrested. Apparently the police just put them on tubes and just told them to leave.
A few of them were arrested, but I feel like that was probably from the splinter groups that were actively trying to get to the protest, as opposed to, you know, just the people who were near the cenotaph. I mean, there were a few people arrested mainly in the cenotaph, but primarily like the people who were arrested were those splinter groups trying to get to the Palestinian route because it was that far.
So despite Suella Braverman saying that she wanted police to stop our rally, there was actually proportionally, like, I think it was like 10 times more arrests with the far right. I think it was even more than 10 times. And they were a lot more aggressive to the police. You had literally police with, I think one had a broken arm, one had a dislocated hip socket or whatever the fuck it's called. And check out the Twitter video that I sent you.
My DMs, give me a second.
So also you finally had far right people calling out the police for not wearing poppies, which was an interesting one.
Let me listen to this.
Just an absolute gammon.
Where's your poppies? Where's your fucking poppy?
So you also had a couple of them arrested for cocaine possession.
These people are great. They're bringing coke and crossbows.
And like, obviously they were drinking fairly heavily. So like there was pictures of them literally with cans of Stella at the cenotaph just before the service was meant to kick off.
They're really not beating like the allegations, the fucking FC allegations. Like they are just...
That's the British values, mate.
British values.
I want to do coke whenever I want to.
Get my crossbows. Fire it at the fucking... it's stupid, man. It's just... The thing is, though, all these arrests here, I didn't see a single one. So it goes to show that, like, because, you know, this is coming from official sources that they got arrested and they were, you know, they were on... I mean, it's clear, like, that it happened, right? That they were out there, they were looking to cause stir trouble. I didn't see them anywhere near the march, which is, like, that's funny.
Well, no, we did, actually.
I mean, obviously, you did, but I didn't later.
No, we did. Remember when we went down to the side and there was loads of police and there was we were, like, cheering at the people?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was EDL.
Yeah, yeah. Really?
Yeah. Anyway, so you had the National Front, which, again, is a neo-Nazi organization. They were allowed to lay a wreath on Saturday. On Sunday, which is like the actual commemoration event, which is insane.
I think even before everything that went down this weekend, the Met also said that, like, in the Remembrance footprint, according to the Independent, this is like counter protesters, including the far right groups, would be allowed in the exclusion zone because apparently they would not cause serious disorder by themselves,
They caused the majority. People were calling Rishi Sunak calling him out rather, and saying, oh, like, I mean, he basically just both sides the whole thing. Like, it was proportionally so much more like trouble on the other side than ours.
He's a coward and he wants to play that moderate position that, like, oh, both sides, it's politically the most expedient, even though it's still shit and like everyone's still going to see through it.
I think that was kind of manufactured, okay? So calling them counter protesters really overstates what they actually were. Like, there was never a counter protest.
It's a false equivalence.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not a counter protest. They were not opposed to what we were saying. Like, I mean, half of these people want to kill Jews.
And that brings me to my point that, like, they didn't even try to, like, well, I mean, they were trying to get to the march, but, like, they were literally there at the cenotaph, and there was no sort of presence at the cenotaph.
They thought everyone would be there. Like, what?
Yeah, which was clearly outlined from the start by the organizers that there was to be no presence in Whitehall. They went there, they kicked up a fuss, and now they're crying about it. Like, and now, but supposedly these two things are, like, we're being made equivalent both to sides. These people.
There was fine people on both sides.
Like, it's fucking, it's a joke. It's literally, a joke. I don't know what else to fucking say.
It kind of reminds me about sorry, I think my microphone just cut out. It would be like how Trump kind of had the Proud Boys to basically just do whatever he wanted. Like, he was literally like a militia group that he controlled effectively. I think I see Suella doing a similar thing.
Mm. No, that's been certainly said. And, like, you know, with the attacks that people, like, isn't also the shit that they were doing to, like, just individuals around stations and stuff. Like, the London Met put out, like, a thread with all the people that they're looking for, which is just, like, most timely online shit.
Yeah.
21st century fucking policing.
Tell you what,
and a couple of them were from them.
We'll get to that. But you had 82 arrested by midday. This chronologically happens all before our thing starts. Yeah?
Mm.
I mean, probably for you, before your coach even starts.
Yeah, no, fully. Like, I didn't know until I was there and you told me. Like, I was not. Yeah. We were on the move, and there was no way that, like, the bulk of protesters could have even, like, met with these people. They were literally just kicking up a fuss over nothing, like, over fears that were stoked up. It's quite literally, yeah, a lot of people have been saying it's Braverman's fears that were pretty much directly responsible, and it's definitely, like, it was all assumptions that they were assuming that we'd go to the cenotaph. There was no presence there. There was just
It was ridiculous. Nowhere near the march. And also, timings, it just wouldn't have worked out.
Mm. Definitely.
Yeah. So anyway, past that, we join the march together, right? And we're trying to get out the sort of bend around Hyde Park. It's like an insane amount of people, like absolutely insane. People from literally any walk of life was there. You had, like, obviously, like we said, like pushchairs. You had families. You had old people, a lot of old people. I remember, like, I was pulling up to Hyde Park and there was literally like a gang of old people there, like in berets, which was quite fun. And then, like, lots of kids. There was even, like, teenagers there. And yeah, it was nice to see.
Retirement home and nurseries for Palestine. That's what we gotta say.
Exactly.
No, it was good, and, like, you know, even during, and the other thing that, like, it wasn't disorderly, like, isn't that, if we contrast what we heard from the EDL and what you actively saw in terms of what happened with those guys, compared to, like, the very respectful manner.
Oh, just in authority, I don't think it was the actual EDL, because I think the EDL collapsed on itself. I think it's just literally, like, a loose association, and some of them were members of groups.
You know, I was just using a shorthand, like the far right people, I guess, who ended up, the counter-protesters, let's say, compared to supposedly the protesters, us, I guess, which is, like, again, what we're being made equivalent to by that sort of language. Like, if you compare that sort of disorder and the disruption that they were causing compared to literally so much respect, like, people were making way, like you said, there were so many times where we had to step away from pushchairs, or, like, the proper sort of space that people gave towards for the prayers.
You're listening to a warrior.
Okay, I'm back.
Yeah. So, like I was saying, there was the... Okay. So, yeah, there was the prayers that were happening as well. I'm not sure if you remember. Like, literally, those were being... They were demarcated areas. Like, as in, you know, unofficially cleared by not even, like, the organizers or... police. I don't think there were any official cordons, but people were quite literally making way and not standing in front of them, which is, like, what you're supposed to do in when people are praying.
People just, like literally putting their coats down as a mat and starting to pray.
I saw some Palestinian flags as well being used later on Twitter, just like those things as well.
But there was some videos of like police with dogs and that. Like, basically, I mean, how scared would you be if you're in the middle of a prayer and a policeman just pulls up with an Alsatian? This Alsatian's barking at you the entire time.
Yeah, there was a lot of like small things, like microaggressions is the wrong word, but like, as in, just you could see that like they were ready to like stir up some shit, and like some people were having it on. I feel like that was generally, I mean, that's clearly the stance of the government. We can get onto like what happened with Michael Gove in a bit, but like there was definitely, you know, capacity for them and almost a willingness to just slip into insightful behavior on the part of the other, you know, the police that were there, the state forces, and also obviously, quite obviously, the far right. Like that's literally their only reason for being there, was to be insightful. But one thing that I must give credit for was, like, obviously, I mean, it's pretty obvious, if it's going to be families, families aren't going to be looking to start a fight with their loved ones alongside them, hand in hand.
Well, you can't fight with literally a pushchair.
Yeah, you can't. It's not exactly, you know, can't exactly throw Molotovs for Hamas or whatever, or be sympathizers, or what we're trying to, what they're trying to make us out to be, with, you know, people who are not equipped for that. We were not there to disrupt. Yeah. We were there for a peaceful protest, and that's what it was at the end of the day, peaceful march. And I feel like it was quite successful in that regard, regardless of all this insightfulness from the run. Yeah, like the willingness of these forces to be insightful towards us. People kept their cool and kept on marching. Obviously, there was jeering and, you know, there's this harassment. Actually, we can get onto this Michael Gove thing, I think.
Yeah, I think we've reached that point. Okay, yeah, are we going to do a self-report?
What are they fucking going to do?
I actually don't care.
We didn't do anything illegal.
No.
We didn't do anything illegal.
Okay, so, there was a couple of times when the process wasn't moving, and we wanted to get to the speeches, sort of.
Yeah, we wanted to get to Vauxhall Bridge, but like there was a big hold up, like in between Vauxhall Bridge, like as in down the street, Vauxhall Bridge Street,
yeah,
and Wellington Arch that we were at.
So basically, we decided like, you know what, we'll just go down some side streets. So the first one we went to, obviously, there was a guy with the EDL, the EDL people that got caught by the police.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, how many EDL per police were there? It was literally like 30 police and 2 EDL just in like a scaffolding, underneath scaffolding.
Mm. Yeah, that's the thing. I didn't actually see like the EDL there. You guys told me afterwards and I was like, oh shit, really? I didn't notice. But yeah. It was like a big squad.
Anyway, so. Sorry, I just had to cough.
It's fine.
So, down one of these side streets, to be honest, I couldn't tell you which one. It was a fairly like well-to-do street as well.
Mm-hmm.
We're walking along, and like we're walking on the pavement, and I see this man in between a truck and a car, like in the gap between them. They're parked on the pavement, and I'm like, "Oh shit, that's Michael Gove."
Yeah, no, people were yelling, "Oh, it's Michael Gove!" Like as in, I remember everyone sort of collectively really realized, like he just spawned, as if he's just spawned
bro,
in.
Bro was just there with a tote bag and a suitcase.
I don't think there's anything out. There's nothing's come out about what he was actually doing.
Oh no, he said he was returning from his constituency, but like, how do you return from your constituency in central London in the middle of it? He definitely came out of a house somewhere.
That's what I was thinking. He must, yeah. And that will get onto my conspiracies in a bit, but still.
Anyway, so we follow him for a bit. We're telling him, like, everyone there is basically like, why are you supporting this? I mean, the guy is very literally like probably one of the most anti-Islamic people, like anti-Islam people in the government.
For like a decade now, he's been presiding over.
He's single-handedly fucked up pretty much everything he's ever touched.
Like he's been a front bencher for the longest time. He's like,
we lived through his education reforms, just dog shit. Like obviously he's the leveling up secretary or whatever. He just does nothing pretty much,
other than preside over gentrification of the urban areas that we're all living in.
And the stuff he says is just so vile. So obviously people are going to be angry towards him. Anyway, we follow him into like follow the crowd as well into Victoria Station. Obviously there's like the famous video. Now the video is like, it's taken from such an angle that you can't really tell what's going on. Like, no one ever touched this man. Like, there was at least like a meter between him and the next person at all times.
What's being circulated around media was very much, I think one of the videos it was that's been prominently featured is the one that was uploaded by conservatives in Tottenham on Twitter. You can't even see Gove in the video. It's quite literally just the police and a scuffle. Which
the people being pushed
back
were literally the police pushing people to clear it. That was literally the only reason.
Mm. It's just that they happened to be there. Gove was like, yeah, I'm going to just walk into these people because I see police officers there.
Yeah.
Like, as in, he really just... What I want to know, and what media, you know, this is something that, like, you know, was from our personal perspective that hasn't been reported on. I really do want to make obvious in this episode about, like, just this whole incident, in a sense. There's a lot of things to know with his body language and sort of his what he was doing and where he was at. So first of all, he had no ministerial escort, no transport. He was walking through. He had,
if
like,
you think this guy
like
doesn't
that.
Have bodyguards like all the time surrounding him,
exactly.
Whenever he goes outside, you're so wrong.
That's the first thing that, you know, we should like, fuck it, that's a red flag. He was there's something off, something fishy.
Such an obvious up.
Exactly. Second of all, like, you could see from his body, he was making eye contact with some of the people questioning, like, how can you be okay? And your government is literally presiding over the killing of kids. You're killing kids. You're killing, you know, babies, right? He was making eye contact and just, I don't think he said a single thing in his whole, it was so surreal, like NPC behavior. He was just looking at people and just walking through, crossing roads, jaywalking, mind you.
Yeah.
And he just kept on walking and he didn't seem like, I don't know, he seemed like assured of himself, you know what I mean? Like, he didn't walk with a sense of like, oh, I'm scared, looking left, right, that kind of thing. He just walked straight. Wasn't scared, wasn't upset, just very blank face. To me, it felt like he was walking with a purpose. Like, he was walking assured that he would be fine.
So he got to the station, right? He wasn't even going to get a train. He literally got taken in a police van from the station to wherever he wanted to go. Yeah.
That's fucking crazy. Because, like, to me, it seemed like the police were, like, a bit shook as well. Like, in terms of, like, they weren't necessarily, or not all of them were prepared for that, like, him to just show up there. But, like, if they had a van there, then that changes things. Like, that clearly sounds like an op. If he was taken in a van, like, there was no reason for him to go there other than to make a little fucking walk of shame or walk of, you know, whatever it was, and get to the police and get out there.
There was a couple of things said to him that, like, regrettably, people did say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think personal insults, like, they have a place, and sometimes, like, it's a good thing, but, like, ultimately, some of them just weren't really, like, it wasn't really what you should be doing.
Mm. But at the same time, I don't know what you could have expected. You know what I mean? Like, he's going out there, he's going to something that he's quite literally, like, presiding over as a front bencher, as a minister. You know, this, what's going on in Gaza, people aren't going to be happy about him there, and he knows that.
Well, there was one person called him a batty boy.
I mean, you're just going to hear that kind of shit, like, as in, people aren't going to be happy with him there.
I think that's almost removed from what the actual meaning is now. It kind of doesn't even mean gay anymore.
Mm. What is that? What's been like reported? I've seen that.
That's what I mean from the videos. That's what
heard. There was a load of insults, but to me, that's like fair game. You're a public figure. You're putting yourself out in public when there are clearly other means. You're walking to a train station, not even to get public transport, to get a private. You know, you. I think there was a deliberate choice.
I would have done the same thing if it was Keir Starmer or anyone else.
Say that again.
I would have done the same thing if it was Keir Starmer.
Oh, yeah, quite literally. It's nothing. Yeah, it's just like these figures are presiding over this shit. Mm.
So I'm reading. There's a headline here, right? So it says, Gove jostled and abused by a pro-Palestine mob. And also you have tweets out here saying, let me just get it up. So it says, Turning Point UK, will any of the pro-Hamas mob who went after government minister Michael Gove face consequences after attempting to lynch him?
No, because none of us fucking did that shit. We were there.
Lynching.
Yes, we hurled insults at him. I fucking called him a prick. I called him a bastard. I did not lay a hand on him. And I didn't see anyone else lay a hand on him. They were getting, like next to him to fucking have a conversation, which he was making eye contact but refused to engage in because he knew that he'd get slaughtered. And for the record, that's in a debating sense, not a fucking literal sense, because there was nobody was going to be the only people who were pushing and shoving were the police. People were just trying to get to him, yeah. Look him in the eyes and say, are you going to, why aren't you answering our questions? People were telling him talk back, but he refused to.
Well, he did originally, but he just kind of gave up on it. But also, it's quite fun being labeled a jihadi on Twitter.
Just like, for fucking
being I don't even there. Need like, to do the shahada. I'm already a jihadi.
Fucking hell. But like, for me, I want to also... This leads me on to, like, I want to bring up, like... I reckon this could have been one of two things. Firstly... Well, I mean, very obviously, it was there to be insightful. That's the whole thing that I'm trying to get to. Like, there was no other reason. He had so many other means of, like, getting around to the places. He just went on this little...
He could have literally just had an Uber.
He could have had an Uber, whatever. He definitely can fucking afford it. Yeah. But he decided to go on this walk. I think that was a very deliberate act. I think it could have been, like I said, it could have been one of two things. I think either, like, he was doing it... And he might be entailed by like some plainclothes officers or something like that, just in case shit did hit the fan. And that's why he was walking with that sort of self-assuredness. He was fine. And he knew that he would have been fine. And he wanted to, he was almost wanting for something to happen, putting himself on the line in a sort of controlled environment because it was a very short walk. Police were there to get him at the end of the day. And he probably had the resources to get a plainclothes like escort in a sense, tailing him in a sense. And we can talk about it later, how we've seen, it was very obvious, like, there were some individuals who were clearly, like, plain clothes, just not investigating, but ready on a moment's notice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that would explain to me, like, why he looked so self-assured, why he was able to just stride like that, and, like, you know, he almost wanted something to happen in a controlled environment so that he could, you know, further this sort of Islamophobic rhetoric. Of, yeah. Oh yeah, like all these people, these jihadis, these Hamas sympathizers, they're violent. I was personally attacked. Be a media darling. And it didn't fucking happen. He was just jeered at and, you know, mocked.
So there's a picture of his bookcase that came out a couple of years ago, I think. And on one side, he's got a Holocaust denier, right? Mm. David Irving.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's got Douglas Murray, who is like an anti-immigration guy.
Mm.
This guy... I don't think he's stupid. I think it was probably definitely planned.
Mm. Like, as in, the thing is, yeah, I think it was, like I said, I think it's deliberate. My second theory, in a sense, or my second hypothesis, is that maybe he was put up to it in terms of, they could have, the Conservative Party, there's always fucking front bench struggles, power struggles, that kind of shit, dirty tricks, whatever. And then we sort of, our genuine, sincere movement, and like what's happening on the day is being used as a sort of, you know, this is fucking bread and butter of all these like governments and stuff like that, these front benches, these partisan politics, is that they'll use genuine movements and genuine events that are going on as a way to snub each other and, you know, keep their hold on power. It might be the case that another minister, and I could see this very much happening, maybe, you know, fudge the date or fudge the sort of wherever he was coming from, fudge his transport, and that he had to make this walk.
He was supposedly coming back from a BBC interview. Which actually clashes with his official line.
Mm. Like, there's just a lot of inconsistency here. Which, you know, that's how they do. They just throw out whatever the fuck and see what sticks. And then go along with that as their official line, or, you know, as the mainstream sort of dominant opinion or whatever it is. But, yeah, like, it's either that. He was doing it in a controlled environment to be insightful and, like, you know, sort of a draw out in a sense to get people to do something, and then the media could focus on that. Basically a media game.
So,
or he was put up to it, but it's still a media game from the Conservative Party.
There was,
they're trying to use this.
A photographer waiting for him at Victoria Station.
That's interesting.
Yeah, interesting.
That's very interesting.
It's almost, but yeah, I don't know.
The thing is, nobody bought onto it, which was good. Like, nobody, obviously, all they could fucking get. And you know that they would have uploaded a lot more if something actually happened to him. But nothing actually happened to him. You just went, he walked and got to the police, and police started shoving people. In fact, they're quite brutal about it. If you want to see from our perspective, I'm going to put it on our socials, on our Instagram. Obviously, faces blurred, because I think, like, now there's been sort of not calls from the London Met and, like, where they're investigating all these videos and shit like that. So we have to be very careful about what we put out there. But I think it's very important to show our perspective, to show that it wasn't a hand laid on him. people were cheering him, making insults, you know.
Yeah, not questioning one person him,
most importantly. Telling him, shame on you. I'll say I was the one to fucking lead it when he was out on the streets. But there was no... throughout this whole protest, there was no sort of incident where... I mean, obviously, there was the thing about, like, that splinter group that went off, I think, onto one of the bridges and did the fireworks or whatever. But, like, I can't speak on that. The official organizers said there was to be no sort of disruptive behavior or action or whatever. They tried to draw us out multiple occasions. I reckon this Michael Gove's appearance definitely was that. But nobody gave into it. Nobody baited into it.
Okay, so even Nadine Dorries, obviously she has a vendetta against him, probably. Mm-hmm. But even she's come out and she's just said, was he drunk? Like, this guy, like, why would you do that? It makes no sense.
But, I reckon, it may have been a reason, but it just didn't go through.
I'm going to conclude it was a definite op.
Yeah, I think there's no two ways about it. Everything lines up for it to be, you know, sort of the government response to it, how it's now being used as the media, you know, reporting, oh, it's harassment, there's a mob. It wasn't a fucking mob. People were just reacting. Most of them would just happen to be in the station and he walked into them. Like, that's where the police were clearing out the way. That's where the supposed little scuffle that, you know, the Met hasn't even really spoken on occurred.
Yeah.
Because he was walking through the crowds. Like, it seemed very deliberate and intentional. And whether he was put up to it or whether he did it himself, this is a Conservative Party trying to discredit the movement, using people's genuine concern and, you know, putting people's fucking well-being at line, you know, people who just happen to be their families who were protesting and stuff like that, getting them to be sort of center of media attention and demonize them. It's just antagonizing, and it's, yeah, like you say, it's very, very much clearly reads like an op. Again, please do check out our fucking Instagram post. We'll blur out the people, but it's very clear that there wasn't a hand laid on him. He was, you can see from his body language, and make of it what you will, but it's just absolutely just a surreal sort of attempt. It's really stupid.
It's cynical. Yeah.
Mm.
Anyway, going past that, there was undercover police, pretty much. I mean, I could spot at least 5 of them. Like, it was just obvious what was kind of going on.
Mm. I think it might be worth, talking about the sort of giveaways. I was just more focused on, trying to get from A to B, in a sense, but...
Okay,
so I guess what struck you that, it was pretty obvious that they were the...
So you had people with hoods up the whole way. You couldn't even see their eyes, and they were speaking to themselves. Like, come on. Unless they're just, I don't know, schizophrenic or something.
It was a high level of... surveillance. I mean, helicopters tailing and, you know, trying to give it that aerial thing. And obviously, everyone knows London has the most CCTV in the world.
Yeah.
But I think that almost stands as a testament to, what actually occurred, as in from the perspective of the marchers, or, you know, what we were actually there to do and what we actually did. They had all that surveillance, and the only thing that they could find on us was, oh, your signs were a bit offensive. Coconut. What? Compared to, there was no violent action. Nothing of note, really.
Well,
other than what they're trying to fabricate and incite us to do, or they were trying to.
So,
and probably will in the future.
I don't know the intricacies of hate crime law, but to me, out of all of those tweets that the police did after, the coconut one is obviously the least bad.
Mm.
You literally, I think you should... huh?
I was going to say you should probably talk about just for people who don't know about what that thread is.
Okay, so the Met Police, they put out a thread afterwards, and I don't think there was one for the EDL march, which was interesting, but there was one for the Palestine one. And there was one guy who very clearly was just anti-Semitic. He was picked out, I think, because he was just saying shit.
Scapegoated.
Well, yeah, but I think he was interviewed by some right-wing, nutter or whatever, who wanted to paint everyone. Who knows? Maybe that was an op as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're talking about 300,000, there's bound to be some bad eggs who it's inevitable to happen, but you really can't paint that out as the majority of the people there. If you look at pictures, they've been unable to. That's the one thing. In media reporting, you won't see big pictures. You'll see it on social media though. People who are actually trying to post and show that side of things. They will just isolate these people who, you know, may have been bad eggs and then paint that out to use their Islamophobic rhetoric and use that to further their sort of agenda. But that was really not what it is. But you continue anyway.
Okay, so I'm just getting the thread up here. So, yeah, so there's one guy in a... who was in like a hat who was... I mean, he was saying stuff that was anti-Semitic. It was fairly blatant. But... So you had one woman who had a Star of David that incorporated a Nazi symbol in it. I don't know. I don't think that's illegal. And then also you had people where... this is quite funny. So they were wearing balaclavas, which, to be honest, is not unreasonable considering the amount of facial recognition software that's there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even Addy was saying, like, sometimes they'll just facial recognition, like a 13-year-old boy and put him on, like, a gangster database.
Mm. And, anyway. Like, God, that's not to mention, like, if they, as in, they're literally posting this on Twitter, anybody can see that. People who really will have, like, go on crusades against these people in terms of, like, the far right and, like, ruin their fucking lives. So, I mean, we've seen it already in America in terms of, like, all those websites where they dox them, or the trucks, I think, they bring to campuses. Like, that shit, it's not happening in isolation. That shit can just see, it's very, I'd say it's very irresponsible of the police to be doing that shit.
So these people with balaclavas, they had, I think it was the Shahada written on them in, like, it's a green band with the Shahada in Arabic written on it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, not a hate crime, but people said, this is what terrorists wear. So, you know, take that as you will.
I think, is that not in of itself a hate crime to be making, like, those kind of racist assumptions?
I think,
like,
so. And then you had a brown woman with a sign with a coconut tree on it, and then, like, falling coconuts on the ground, being Rishi Sunak and Suella. Suella.
I mean, all I'm going to say on that is, objectively, that's not necessarily... Okay, maybe you could say, oh, it's because they're brown and you, whatever. But, like, making that allusion to a coconut is not necessarily, like... I swear, like, half the people who have now found out, who have, you know, are taking offense to this, have only found out about what the, you know, unofficial meaning of a coconut is, or I guess the slang term of a coconut actually is, just simply because of this, just to stir up shit. But that in of itself, there's no direct indication that that's what the person was meaning. Very fucking piss poor for it to be, like, that's the best example they can find of a hate crime from the pro-Palestinian side.
So, like, the people who, interviewed the guy doing the anti-Semitic thing, it was Rebel News. I don't know much about these people, I'll be honest with you. Okay.
Never heard of them.
It says here, it's a far-right political and social commentary website operated by Rebel News Limited. There you go.
That's about right.
Yeah, so...
Crazy how a name like this, like Rebel News, they're the ones to be glazing fucking the conservatives the most.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Oh, it's ran by the Ian Miles Chong guy, the Malaysian guy.
Oh, for fuck's sake. He's like the most, well, the guy in terms of, like, all the the fucking Indian nationalists. Like, obviously, I know he's not Indian, but he's like, he gives that energy the most.
Indian lions, sir.
We are here on Netanyahu. Stupid shit, man.
Oh, fucking hell. Anyway, yeah, so... Again, it was, even a crowd of however many people that was, and you picked out 7 people. Come on.
With really flimsy fucking, you know, lines of argument that they were causing hate crimes or whatever. I mean, you can be looking for them, I guess, because that's your prerogative, however fucked up that is. But still, like, what the fuck are you going to do? It's such a flimsy haze.
Yep. Which, fun times.
Yeah, I think...
I don't know. As far as the press there was quite a lot of Arabic-speaking press, which was good. And, like, the reaction from Palestinians so far has been fairly positive. I don't know.
And I think that's the most important thing. Like, as in, we're trying to... The protest, again, like, to underline it, and really, is, if this is one of the final points that we're going to make, it's like, it was not there to be disruptive. It was there to, you know, raise awareness, to fucking put it on blast in the sense that showed that, like, there is real solidarity. This country stands vehemently against, you know, what our government is facilitating. We don't stand with our government at all. We're standing against sort of like this oncoming tide of just apathy and, you know, willful ignorance from Prime Minister, from all those ministers, towards what's going on in West Bank and Gaza.
Well, it's not even apathy. They're engaged in it. They're effectively complicit. Yeah.
Definitely. They're not a neutral party. And we, you know, what we were there to show is that, like, number one, we're not stupid. We know that they're not a neutral party. We've shown direct links. There's been direct action across the country from all sectors. Strike action against the sit-ins from students. Loads of boycotts. I think boycotts are really good. That kind of thing. It's been like across society and like across countries as well. It's in, really an international effort. A lot of people are realizing this.
Yeah.
Come into sort of the consciousness of like, yeah, people are politically conscious about this. That was the first thing. The second thing was sort of to show like people as well, to show other people that would, you know, one of the chants was the one about like, Palestine, don't you cry. You know, we're not going to let it die. That was one that, like, you know, really resonated for me, I feel like. And that's, you know, that's the sort of messaging we wanted to show that, like, to internationally that, you know, the people of Britain don't condone what the government's doing. We want to stand against it. They don't represent us. Those in Westminster, they don't represent us. And I think, you know, the fact that it was only pretty much 2,000 supposed counter-protesters and they weren't even there to counter-protest really does reflect sort of what the national consciousness is beginning to move toward. Sort of the marginalized groups of society as well, so the old youth, you know, sort of like not when, you know, even the median is beginning to move there as well. Like you said, you saw people from all the different sectors of society. I think that's what it's all about when we discuss Gaza. And when we, I think there's, at the end of the day, like I went away from it very satisfied. There were questions for me personally anyway about like, you know, is this actually going to mean anything? I feel like the effects of us showing solidarity, being there physically, it's not something that is really tangible, something that you can really measure in a sense, because again, the media machine, everything like that, it's something that you can't really quantify in a sense. It's all going to be very abstract, but I think a show of like sort of solidarity, that kind of thing, is important, more important than we'll know. And I think, like, you know, even if you're not able to financially contribute to any sort of, you know, humanitarian cause, whatever, because obviously we're broke students, personally speaking, both of us can attest to that. I think it is important to have the conversations, important to hold people accountable. You know, again, not in a disruptive way. You've got to be smart about it. That's obviously the one thing. That's, you know, it's real. And I feel like everyone really had that sense and was really spot on with that. That's why I feel like the proceedings of the march were really good, because, like, we didn't give in to that bait, whether that was Michael Gove there, the EDL forces there, not the, you know, far right, yes. Don't want to get in no legal battles. But yeah, it's just really important to take a stand in whatever means. You know, I saw this podcast, this is about Palestine, it's called, and people were saying how, like, those working in the hospital that's been made out to be the Hamas base, their form of resistance is through practicing, like, you know, healthcare to those who need it. That's how they resist. I think in the Imperial Court, the best thing that we can do is not give in to this sort of sectarian leftist sort of infighting about, oh, we should do it this way, we should, you know, that way, do this, do that. People talking about the term, using the term coconut or stupid shit like that. It's got to be that we got to take a firm stand and, like, you know, presence as well, wherever we can in our communities, have these conversations, have these debates. Don't let people get away with it, with sort of apathy, inaction, or even, like, you know, what if, what aboutism, two sides, that kind of shit. It's about, you know, confronting it where it rears its ugly head in terms of, like, the forces that will continue to sustain and maintain this oppression, and, you know, having a good group around you as well, people doing it, sort of getting your friends involved, that kind of thing, raising awareness and taking direct action. There's loads of means. But yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's all I've got to say. You want to talk about any final things that you want to say?
No, I think that's pretty much it, to be fair. It was good. Don't know, just keep it up, I guess.
I felt really satisfied going away from it, and you know, a real sense that hopefully the national consciousness is, you know, with the newer generations, with people not no longer being able to tolerate just this oncoming swathe of just everything that the government's throwing at us in its pursuit for profit and marginalization, in a sense. People get inside of it, and this was a real sort of evidence, a testament to that fact. But yeah, I guess
we'll have to see how the years proceed. Yeah. How things proceed next the new year.
Indeed.
New should episodes, hopefully.
Should we? AYM. Yeah, should we
not
wrap
just
it
once
up
in a few weeks? Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to.
Yeah, all right.
This has been
A1. That's cool to do. All right. See ya.